Hello, it's Ed Gamble here from the Off-Menu podcast that you're currently listening to. I am on tour now. The show is called Hot Diggity Dog. Make sure you go and get yourself a ticket. I'm probably coming to a town near you if you live in the UK and Ireland. And Ireland, Dublin and Belfast. Do go to edgamble.co.uk, buy yourself a ticket, and I'll see you for an evening of Hot Diggity Dog.
Hot Diggity Dog!
Thank you, James.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Excuse me, could you bring me another spoon? This one's a little bit dirty. Welcome to the Off-Menu podcast.
Hello, Ed.
Hello, did you like that one?
I did like that one a lot. Yeah, I thought it was very good.
I'll be honest, I'm kind of running out of them.
And I don't think you can tell.
We're not that many podcasts in, really.
You cannot tell, Ed.
Because this is, I don't know if people know, we're doing 1,000 episodes of this.
Yes.
That's the aim, isn't it? 1,000 yep. episodes. Benito's giving us a thumbs up.
Yeah, but like, I mean, you just got to start. Every time you go out for meals and stuff, you got to start remembering everything you hear.
Yeah, okay.
Write them all down, and you've got to have them ready to go.
Well, anyway, welcome to the Off-Menu podcast is broadly what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
I'm Ed Gamble, and that is...
James Acaster.
That's it. That's
Ed is wearing a T-shirt that says ham on it.
I am. You know why?
Do you love food?
I love ham, I love food, and I love this T-shirt.
The pink T-shirt with dark pink letters.
It says ham.
Very good.
James, do you want to just remind everyone what the Off-Menu podcast is? I don't think we now need to do it.
Sure.
But just in case there are any new listeners who are here off the fact our brilliant guest Jay Rayner is on this week, maybe we've brought some new listeners. So maybe you want to give people a quick idea of what we're going to be doing, mate.
We'll be asking Jay what his favourite ever starter, main course, dessert, side and drink is.
It's a dream meal in a dream restaurant.
And I'm a genie.
Yeah, James is a genie. Jay Rayner, of course, is the food critic for The Observer. You may have seen him on shows like MasterChef. He's often one of those critics who goes in towards the end of the competition.
The final table.
And goes like, ooh, gravy, and all of that.
Yeah.
That's one of his catchphrases. Yeah. Hope he doesn't mind me saying that. He's a brilliant guest.
He did The Final Table.
He did The Final Table, yeah, which is a Netflix cooking competition show that we both enjoy.
Yeah, really over the top.
Yeah.
Big gladiators music and stuff like that. And they've all got every episode is a different country, and they have to make cuisine from that country, and they're all in pairs, all the chefs are.
Yeah.
And it's so ridiculous. I love it.
If they ever did a comedian's final table, would you go on there with me?
Yes, I would. We would both go on it. But, you know, I hope you'll be okay with me adding ice cream to everything. Trying to sneak it in every single time.
James, you absolutely would do that. Unless, of course, it was the secret ingredient that they said we weren't allowed to use.
Oh, yes.
Because that's something we do on this podcast, where if a guest mentions a certain ingredient in their dream meal, then they get kicked out of the restaurant.
No ifs, no buts, no coconuts.
Bye-bye. And it doesn't have to be coconuts. It's not been coconuts yet.
No, it's not been coconuts. Which is interesting, actually, because a lot of people don't like coconuts.
Well, 1 week we should have no ifs, no buts, no coconuts.
Yeah, 1 week it'll be coconuts.
But it's not this week. This week, the secret ingredient is hairy crackling.
I like crackling.
Yeah.
I do not like it when it's got those little hairs on it.
No
The
way.
Stubble or even the big big curly hairs.
No, I like a clean shaven crackling.
Yeah. I do not. Also, I don't like pork scratchings when they're soggy.
When they're soggy?
Yeah, when you get a soggy one.
Yeah, horrible. And occasionally, it's like Russian roulette sometimes with pork scratchings. You're just popping them in and then occasionally a little soggy one. And then you're reminded about what it is and you're just eating skin.
Yeah, really not nice. Really, yeah. Really takes you out of the moment.
Takes you out of the moment of eating the skin.
But crackling, which I guess is, it's the same as pork scratchings, isn't it?
Yeah, just little bits of crackling.
See me. But like, hairy crackling.
Hairy crackling. I mean, it feels so unlikely.
If he says crackling, we have to push him on.
Yeah. Do you want hair on that?
How do you feel about hairy crackling? Yeah. Are you okay with that? And if he's not, if he goes, yeah, I love it.
Well, I'm very.
Well, maybe you'll love the door.
Oh, and you should note that we're recording at Jay's publisher's because we're talking about his new book, and it is a big. Big old echoey room. So that's why perhaps the sound quality isn't quite what we're used to. Oh, what's that? It's our big pile of free stuff that we have here. That's James rubbing his legs together. It's your legs, you little cricket boy. We often get sent little free samples of things from various food and drink companies, and it's a beery week this week.
Oh man, a big old beery week.
Wild Beer Co.
What?
Which is perfect for us, I think, because we love a beer and we're kind of wild.
We are kind of wild, actually. So.
Wild Beer Co. have sent us some really interesting sounding beers for things like raspberries and pink peppercorns.
Pineapples,
smoky, spicy beers.
Wild yeasts.
That was my nickname at university. Yeah, it was. So we're excited to try those as well. But those aren't the only beer people who've been in contact.
Have you been
this
to
week.
Chilton?
I've never been to the Chilterns.
No? Wow. No. There's a brewery there called the Chilton Brewery.
And they've sent us some beers, haven't they?
Yep, they have sent us some beers.
We're going to be so pissed this
I think it's
week.
The only brewery in the Chilterns.
Well, I don't know. I wouldn't like to cast aspersions, but it's as far as I know, they are in the Chilterns.
They are in the Chilterns.
That's all I know. And they've sent us some free stuff. So as far as I'm concerned, they are the only brewery in the Chilterns.
Yes.
If you are a rival brewery in the Chilterns and you want to get mentioned on this podcast, send us some beer. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
But we don't want to be pissed all week, do we? So luckily, the Real Kombucha Company have sent us some kombucha.
I like kombucha.
Me too, man.
We've talked about it on the podcast before, I believe, but I do like it.
Look, we've all spent time in LA. We're cool, sort of laid-back cafe gratitude kombucha drinking hippies.
Exactly.
Fermented mushroom drink.
Yeah. Is that what it is, fermented mushrooms?
Yeah, it's like a sort of mushroom. It's like a fungus type thing, right?
I do like it. Benito's pulling the face, but I like it.
There's one I have when... I have in America, which has got like chia seeds in the bottom of it, and the chia seeds are all puffed up and slimy like tadpoles.
Yes.
So you get the fermented thing and then like the slimy bit at the end, and it's really good actually.
Well, you know what?
What?
That's the worst job I've heard of someone describing something and trying to make it sound nice, but still. Well, I'll give it a go, Ed.
Yeah, thank you. So thank you to the Real Kombucha Company. Thank you to those two breweries. We look forward to tasting those. If you want to send us some stuff...
Send us some ice cream, goddammit, some chocolate.
Yeah.
How many hints do I have to drop?
We've had a lot of booze, but we would like something to balance it out. I like crisps, I like nuts, I like cheese. If you are a cheese company, if you are a dairy, and you want to send me a wheel of cheese, imagine the publicity... of me taking delivery of a huge wheel of cheese.
My girlfriend has become obsessed this week with getting, I think it's like carbonara that's cooked in the actual wheel. In the actual wheel of cheese. She keeps sending me Instagram pictures of it, photos of it, videos.
Right. Do that. Send me a wheel of Parmesan and then I'll cook James's girlfriend some carbonara within it.
That's fair enough.
Yeah. Yes. But here is the off menu of Jay Rayner. We're here with Jay Rayner. Hello, Jay.
Hello, Ed.
Thank you so much for coming. Here he is.
Welcome, Jay Rayner.
Well, that was a better welcome. I mean, yours was a bit under... You know, like you hadn't thought anything through and he'd actually come up with a sound effect.
I know, but he's a genie and I can't make those sound effects.
Can you not?
No. I could try and make them with my mouth.
You could... Yes. Rather than the bodily parts that James used for that process.
Yes, 10 years in genius school, you better do those sounds, Ed. But
is
not...
it 10 years? Is
yeah,
it?
Yeah, is it 10 years? Years? Yeah,
do you move years. Through a kind of apprenticeship scheme?
Yes, you do, yeah. So for a while, I had to ghost another genie and watch okay. what they did and stuff. And like,
you had to ghost another genie?
Yeah, which is quite hard, because I had to go to ghost school for that. So I had to go to school for like 10 years.
Then gaslight a genie.
Yeah.
I'm making them feel really bad about this in a really subtle manner.
Do you mean shadow?
Yeah, probably.
Because ghosting is ignoring someone. So you can't ignore a genie to become a genie.
Oh, you're right. I had to shadow a genie.
You had to go to shadow school.
I had to go to shadow school and become a gladiator.
It's paid off. All the effort has paid off because that sound you made.
You liked the sound?
I liked the sound.
And that went very well when I made the sound earlier. We thought someone was coming in.
Yeah. Oh, someone will come in. They'll come in with coffee and tea.
Oh, yes, of course, because we ordered hot drinks, didn't we?
We did. We accepted the offer of them. In fact, yes. I can see them through the door.
What hot drink have you ordered, Jay?
I've ordered coffee with milk.
Ah.
And here it comes.
Did you specify what milk you wanted?
No, because there is basically milk.
Is that your view of things? Well, in the world in general? Or? Thank you so much.
Well, I mean, I suppose there are... I leave a pause and say, would you like me to hold on for the footsteps to recede? And we like the footsteps. Those are Lauren's footsteps. Lauren is brilliant. She's handing the press on my new book. But we'll get there.
Lauren and footsteps. Make sure you put the credit in the thing beneath it.
If you're asking, are there types of milk? Well, there are grades. I mean, there's skimmed, semi-skimmed, whole.
And if you had to only have one of them for the rest of your life, which one would you choose?
Whole.
Milk. Yeah.
Is that what's in the coffee now, then?
Well, I didn't milk the cow, so I can't really judge. I just received the coffee. But should we go with that?
Because I think if you say
milk, it's whole milk.
I think if you say milk, I think people are going to put semi-skimmed in there. But that just might
They're going to put whatever was in the fridge and came to their hands. So if it was, I mean, this is quite a, you know, quite a posh publisher. So
yeah, they've probably got a range of milk.
Yeah, but if you were then referring to other things that result from torturing various nuts and grains.
Yes.
They're not milk.
No, you do not class them as milk, not at all.
Do I not class them as milk? I'm just talking lexicographically.
Yes.
They're not milk. You cannot milk an oat.
No.
However hard you squeeze it.
That's true.
You're just going to get something.
You're going to get some oat paste.
You'll get a discharge, but a discharge is not the same as milk.
And you can't put that on the carton, really.
You can't, oat discharge.
Oat
milk. Yeah, try that. Try that and see how your marketing works.
When you say that whole milk is your favourite of the milks, is that because you... So for me, I'm a semi-skimmed guy, but that's because...
I can see that, James.
Yes, thank you. But I was raised on semi-skimmed, as it's always in the fridge.
Too.
So I've never changed my mind.
Yeah.
But have you made your own decisions?
I've gone through the semi-skimmed years. Look, if I'm really honest, there are both in my fridge.
Right.
So semi-skimmed for tea.
Yes.
But I drink almost entirely coffee.
Uh-huh.
And that has to be whole milk.
Right, so it's different notes for different
plus,
needs.
We have revised our opinion on the health or otherwise of dairy fats.
Uh-huh.
And they are no longer the great killer that we once thought they were.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's fine. Eat all the butter you like.
I love ice cream.
Because look at how thin I am.
Yeah. Well, no one can see. No one can see what any of us look like.
You see, I try the subtle radio joke and he just kills it dead.
I think we can all agree that...
I'm in a subtlety school. Subtlety school's a lot harder to say than you think.
I think
subtlety school?
Oh, well done.
It's hard.
Goddamn
it's hard. Could you take it as a subsidiary alongside Genie Major?
A subsidiary...
A subsidiary subtlety school.
Oh, Jesus.
Subsidiary subtlety school.
Yeah. I could do, actually. Yeah. That'd be pretty...
I think we can all agree that anyone who drinks skimmed milk is an absolute maniac, though, right?
Yep.
Well, it's kind of... Yeah.
It's water.
Just water. It's slightly opaque water.
Yeah, white water.
Mm. I think it's an insult to the cow.
I think it is as well.
Mm-hmm. You know, the cow has been put through this process. Some people think the process abusive. I'm not entirely convinced that it's always abusive. But then they go through all that effort. They are milked.
Yep.
Their teats are pulled. And then someone goes, no, it's not good enough. We're going to have to water it. We'll just have to take all the interesting stuff out of it and leave you with something which pretends to be milk.
Poor old cow.
What do you think the highest compliment to the cow is that we do with milk? The best thing we do with milk.
The best thing we do with milk. Well, to be mildly serious for a moment, cheese is like bread and like beer is a way of using surplus that you cannot use instantly. Right. So milk sours very quickly. So what do you do with all your milk production? You come up with cheese. So a really good old cheese, which goes on for years,
yes,
has to be the greatest tribute to the milked cow there is.
Yeah.
I think cheese is my favourite hobby.
Is it?
Yeah.
Are you big on cheese?
Sitting down with a bit of cheese.
He does love cheese. He also likes winding me up with it. I'm fine with cheese in general. I just don't like it as a dessert. It really winds me up when people get cheese in business.
It's not dessert. It's shopping.
Thank you very much.
Look, I never review the cheese board in a restaurant.
Good on you.
If there is a reason. I mean, there was one restaurant I remember where I went in to review it. I think it's gone now. But they placed the cheese trolley right next to the door so that when you push open the door, you smelt the cheese trolley. Well, actually, what you smelt was arse, because really good cheese is smelt. And I don't think they really got this, but you smelt arse as you went in. But my view is that cheese, a good cheese trolley, is just the victory of shopping. So I'm delighted they went shopping. I'm delighted they have a cupboard.
Yes.
For the keeping of the cheese, but I'm not really that interested.
Oh, but get to pick what you want. It's so exciting.
Well, that may sound like a good day out. I mean, is it reasonable to question whether as a diabetic you're not necessarily going to hit the dessert list with the same enthusiasm perhaps I am?
Sometimes.
So for you, cheese is a way through
sometimes
being discriminated against as a man with a pathology.
But I could eat dessert if I, inject insulin for it, but sometimes you can't be bothered with that sort of thing. So sometimes cheese is
the way. You don't want to jack up before a meringue.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so I can just have a lovely bit of cheese.
Well, that's fair enough. You can do what you like. I mean, I'm reviewing restaurants. So.
Even if I wasn't diabetic, I still think I'd lean towards the cheese board.
Yeah, but you're type 1, you always have been, so you have no idea.
Yeah, true.
I mean, well, I was diagnosed when I was 13.
Really? So God, you're a fucking nightmare for the first 12 years.
Be honest.
Sorry. I mean, I want you to know that I'm not obviously taking the piss out of diabetes.
I would like Jay to review your childhood, please. Very excited. You're a second critic on the podcast.
Well, second, if you count the first. No, love Grace it. Is a Shots very fire. Dear friend of mine and a colleague. We yes. share many things.
Yes.
Including an audience.
So, yes.
You know, we divide and rule. We don't review the same restaurants ever.
Oh, really?
No,
oh,
well. we have a system. It's of I'm direct, but I have to go through her editor because she's obviously quite a bit grander than I am. So her editor and I exchange lists of restaurants. Oh. And he says, can I take X? And I say, yes, if I can take Y. So that you never have the chance of, either clicking on or picking up the Guardian, the Observer over a weekend and finding Grace Dent and me holding forth on the same restaurant over the same weekend, or in fact any weekend.
That's good.
Yeah. And so, when it comes to like what restaurants you review, do you personally choose that?
I choose them.
Oh, and how do you make your mind up?
I look at the size of the brown envelopes that have been placed on my desk, and I work out which one. It's a writing job. It's not an eating job.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to. I'm paid for how I write. So it has to have a story to it. It has to be compelling. And that's what I'm always looking for, because there are any number of, let's say gastro pubs in the UK, and they all have the same menu. I can describe that menu to you if you like.
Yeah.
What the British gastro pub menu is now a risotto, a beetroot and goat's cheese salad, and a terrine to start.
Yeah.
It's a sea bass dish, a pork belly dish, and a ribeye steak for the main. And it's a lemon tart, a creme brulee, and a chocolate fondant for dessert. That is now the default British menu. And there are any number of gastro pubs that do that really, really well. But if I went into one of them, I wouldn't have anything to say for 1,100 words. So I'm looking for somewhere that I can write 1,100 words about. Mm-hmm. And then I'm looking for a change in location, in price point, in style. Just trying to keep it, mixed up.
Amazing. I never think about that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, it makes perfect sense when you say it, but yeah.
Well, I quite like my job, so I want to keep it.
Do you ever think, you just, for a laugh, just go and, review McDonald's or something?
I have reviewed McDonald's.
What? When did you do this?
What's brilliant is when you feel you've sat down to do a podcast with people who've done their research.
Oh, no, we don't do any of that.
Do you not do any research?
No, no, no.
So I'm going to have to plug my...
We can see the book on the table, so we'll definitely help you plug
the goddamn book.
All right, so what happened was there was an Italian critic, restaurant critic, who gave McDonald's a bad review.
Right.
And McDonald's sued him for criminal libel.
Right.
So as an act of solidarity, I went and reviewed McDonald's. Essentially what I said was, look, we know it's basically shit.
Yeah.
And it's okay if you eat it every now and then.
Yeah.
But let's not pretend, you know, the chips are awful, even though actually, weirdly, in this book about my Last Supper, I do include McDonald's chips as one of my top five all-time chip experiences, but it's number five, and I can come back to that.
We have a regular argument about Burger King chips versus McDonald's chips.
Well, it's Burger King every time. Yes. Whoever's saying correct. McDonald's is wrong.
But correct, anyway. Jay. Oh, lovely Burger King chips followed by a cheese trolley.
Yeah, well, that's it. That's dinner sorted. So anyway, my review was sort of solidarity. We said, well, no, it's crap. Yeah. It's fine every now and then if you want that crap. And it finished with the line to McDonald's lawyers, come and have a go if you think you're hard enough.
Lovely.
And did they?
No.
No.
No. They dropped their case against the poor Italian man.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
I think the stupidest documentary ever is that one when he eats all the McDonald's every single day.
It's samey.
What point? It's samey. At what point? He's just making a point we all knew before he even went into it. Yeah.
I did the high-end version of that for another book.
Oh, yeah?
So Super Size Me, which was the Morgan Spurlock film where he went and ate McDonald's every day for a month, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And if they said, would you like to supersize that, he hadn't, and then he was medically checked. So the high-end version was to eat in a Michelin 3-star every day for a week. And if they said, would you like to take the tasting menu, I had to say that. And I did that in Paris.
And the pairing, did you always take the pairing as well?
No, actually I didn't, because that would have just made it ridiculously. I mean, it was ridiculously expensive, and it was because I was paying for all of them. It was finding companions was the real issue. I had to get people to come out to Paris to join me.
And that was hard, to get people to come to Paris and have a free Michelin star meal.
Yeah, it was slightly tricky. Nailing them all was quite difficult as well. And I have to say, it was grinding. There is a point when you get to, you know, silver-leafed seawater foam on a stick, where suddenly I'm losing the will to.
So we start the meal with, we always start this way, still or sparkling water.
Oh, sparkling.
Always sparkling.
Always sparkling, yeah, absolutely. I mean, what's the point? You know, still water is an opportunity to drink sparkling water that's been wasted.
Right.
Simple as that. Again, there is a chapter on that in this. I went to a sparkling water sommelier.
Oh,
wow.
And I
what?
Taste, yeah, there is one. I mean, I'm not sure if it's an official title or one he made. No, I'm sure it's an official. He said he got it from an institution in Germany,
right.
Which kind of makes sense, doesn't it? That you'd have to go to Germany to get a title.
Did he set it up, though?
I think that was next to my genius school.
Yeah. But we did a sparkling water tasting, and we finally found that the optimum sparkling water was a thing called Châteaudun, which was Louis XIV's favourite water, naturally effervescent. And it was gorgeous.
That's what is Badoit naturally effervescent?
Yes, it is, I think.
That's the only one I really like.
And really salty.
Yeah.
High in minerals. Like,
so your book's called My Last Supper.
Right.
It's a concept based on our podcast, of course.
Of course it is. Yeah. Although mildly commissioned 2 years before your podcast was ever launched.
Oh, yes. Sure, but our podcast was commissioned in our brains 3 years ago.
I think you'll find, Jay, we came up with the idea of having a favourite food.
I think you probably did, and I acknowledge your supremacy.
Thank you.
In favourite foodness.
Yes.
The problem is, as a food critic, you have so many different meals that you never get to decide what your favourite is.
Well, finally I have it.
Finally, you're here.
So listen, the point is, so when I do my one-man shows, I do question and answer at the end, and the question I've been asked most regularly is, Jay, imagine you're on death row, what's your last meal? And I'm always touched by the fact that they want to see me put to death. And my stop response has been, I think I would have lost my appetite.
Right, yeah, of course.
And I got thinking about all the people who are eligible for last meals, and they are the condemned, the suicidal, the terminally ill.
It's always dark.
It's always dark. Yeah. There's one other category, which is the suicide bomber, but I can't even bring myself to get into that.
And also, you'd be so nervous.
Wouldn't you?
You'd be so nervous.
Butterflies in the stomach before it was flung.
You just need some Rennies. That would be my last meal before.
So I was saying, none of these people are really suitable to eat one.
Yeah.
And anyway, that's not the question they're asking. When you ask someone, what would your last meal be? What you're really saying is, if no one was looking, if you could just express who you are through a bunch of dishes, and there were no consequences, you weren't going to worry about how you felt the next day, what would you have? So the book is my journey to find those ingredients, explain the stories behind them, psychoanalyze myself, talk a bit about music and food and all of that, and then at the end have a big fuck-off party and find out whether it was worth it or not, and then move on with my life.
Did you actually have a big
party? Oh, yeah. Yes, I had my last supper
yes.
in a room above a pub in West London.
Amazing.
40 of us. We got a piano in. I had most of the band that I play with because I have this sideline as a jazz musician. And got a really good chef to work on the dishes and the various things. Yes. Some of the things you asked from my menu and I...
Yes.
A couple of them are actually from The Last Supper.
Excellent.
And a couple of them aren't.
Did Dent get an invite to The Last Supper?
We are colleagues. We're not. I admire La Dent very deeply and very profoundly, and I'm a big fan of all her work.
Yes. Yeah. But no, for Dent.
No.
Absolutely not.
So we've got some sparkling water.
The end result, because there is a bit of a toll environmentally, yeah. Not on the CO2, because the CO2 used in sparkling water where it's been injected into it is a byproduct from the fertilizer industry. So,
oh wow,
that's you know when was it last summer of 2018? In case you're now listening to this in 2042 as a legacy podcast, summer of 2018, there was suddenly a CO2 shortage,
right.
And beer companies were telling pubs to stop selling beer and all that.
There was a lot of panic.
So the reason was because the fertilizer companies tend to close down some of their factories in the summer to clean them down. And CO2 is a byproduct of the fertilizer industry. And they all closed down at once by accident. And there was a shortage of CO2, which is why there weren't any fizzy drinks. It's why they couldn't power certain things. And
I do remember that now. I'd forgotten about that, but I did an episode of Mock the Week.
I think I did that one as well. That was one of the news stories.
That's
that
one of the news stories.
Didn't really make the edit very
well. Anyway, so there's the packaging thing and all of that. So I now have a home... carbonation machine.
SodaStream.
A SodaStream, yeah.
Other ones are available. But I'm not even sure they are. So I have a SodaStream and I like
yes.
it. Which means I can calibrate my level of effervescence.
Right. Pop it on top of bread, Jay! Pop it on top of bread!
Well, it depends where you are, James. But
you're here in the dream restaurant, Jay.
No one's
well,
watching.
Geez, if there's a big pile of poppadoms, I'm face down in them.
Yes.
I think I am.
Yeah.
Because they're lentil-based.
Right.
So I'm not a keto dieter, but given my physical, I have a metabolism basically engineered for the Russian steppes when the Cossacks are coming. there's a particular Jewish Ashkenazi trait to be big shouldered and have big thighs
right.
and a big ass. Because it's cold in Russia and you need to survive when there's a pogrom. So I'm basically engineered for a pogrom. And that means a slow metabolism, not good at running, terrible at DIY. But and because of all those things, I try to avoid carbs. Although I had toast for breakfast, so I don't avoid it very much. But, bread doesn't happen very much in my life. But poppadoms.
Yes.
I think they're lentil-based, aren't they?
I'm not sure. I've actually never... Do you know what?
You've been asking this question quite a lot, haven't you? And you've never checked.
I've never checked. And most things... I guess most things I eat in life, I don't even know what
I thought it was just its own type of food.
You thought it came...
out the ground.
You thought, the poppadom trees.
Yeah.
They grind down the ingredients of the poppadom trees.
I'd never thought about it.
Yeah, they're lentil-based.
I'm happy
lentil
to go with
flour.
That, yeah.
Can you remember where you've had, the best poppadoms you've ever had?
Oh, the best poppadoms you'll ever have... are after Deliveroo have dropped, or other food delivery companies, have dropped the Curry House Finest onto your own, living room coffee table.
Yeah.
While you're watching probably you two on a replay on Dave.
Much obliged.
As long as they're freshly out of, reasonably freshly out of the deep fryer. Right?
Do you have a favourite local curry house that you frequent?
No, I keep sort of circulating through varieties of them, thinking the perfect one is out there, when it isn't.
Yeah.
Do you find that, because I guess a lot of people would have, just standard places they go to all the time. Obviously, your job is to go to loads of different places, but then in your free time as well, are you also...
No, actually, the truth is, in my free time, I tend to go to similar places.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a particular Chinese on Gerrard Street.
Right.
Where I go to by myself.
And
sit there with my back to the door so no one can see my shame. And that does really good roast Cantonese duck.
And are you not naming it so people can't come and
It's called the Four Seasons on Gerrard Street.
Lovely.
Number 12, because if you go there and you stand looking north on Gerrard Street, right in the middle, you'll see that number 12 is the Four Seasons. But number 14 is also the Four Seasons. They are clearly, you look at the fascia, clearly part of the same company. Nobody knows why there are two of them. There is no archway linking those dining rooms. There are just two doorways. I don't know anybody who's ever gone into number 14, but number 12 It's bizarre. It's one of the great mysteries of London's Chinatown.
The way you told that was so great. It felt like the beginning of a new Harry Potter book. To two doors with the same
There's
address
two doors.
Side by side.
And then one day I went into the other one.
Yeah.
And that's when the adventure began.
And that's run by the twin of the guy who runs the other one.
And they hate each other and they haven't talked in 40 years. But they get their ducks from the same place.
One's got a scar on his left cheek and one's got a scar on his right cheek.
And sometimes people can't remember which one is which.
Yeah.
I love it. I want to read it.
But anyway, the Cantonese roast duck there is you know, I think the Chinese do the best things with ducks of all the cooking.
Hang traditions. Them in the window a lot of the time.
Well, you know, they've got to be somewhere.
Yeah.
Show off the goods.
Yeah.
A lot can happen in 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
So we come to your starter.
Yep.
So we're into the big leagues now, into the proper courses.
Yep.
Is it from a specific place, this starter?
I suppose in the memory it is, because this is actually one of the things that's part of my Last Supper, and I reference a meal with my late mother at a restaurant called Rules. Now, Rules is on Maiden Lane in Covent Garden. It's been there since 1798.
I went there recently.
Did you?
Yeah, for the first time.
Was it good?
It was very nice. I had, Ed's been making fun of me for this, but I had a black velvet. I never drank a black velvet
Guinness
before.
Guinness and...
Champagne.
Guinness and champagne, yeah.
I loved it
I've
so
been
much.
Making fun of you because then you went to the pub in in Brixton.
And what, and asked for a black velvet?
For a black velvet. And they had no idea what
Which you champagne about. Would you like in that, my dear boy?
Well, I told Nish to get it.
Yeah.
And Nish refused to say black velvet to them, but basically, and he came back with a pint of Guinness.
What, on questions of diversity in Brixton? So it was kind of, sure. I live in Brixton.
Yes. But
just to make it clear that I can make those jokes. Maybe I can't. Fuck.
We'll find out.
We'll find out. Rainer, he's a racist.
But he got a pint of... So he came up with a pint of Guinness and Prosecco. And then I just poured the Prosecco in the Guinness and I did not feel good the next day.
So, but you had probably had to drink some of the Guinness first and then top it up with
also
Prosecco,
I had to have
right?
it in the Guinness glass, which when I got it at Rules, they give it to you in a chilled, like tankard kind of
metal. Was it a pewter
I guess
mug.
So.
Yeah.
It's like
metal. That's a metal.
Yes.
Yeah. Did they have pewter in Kettering?
No, no. Absolutely not.
pewter never reached Kettering.
If you had a pewter in Kettering, you're getting beaten up, mate.
Really? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
With the pewter.
Yeah, with the pewter.
With the pewter. Banged around the head. I mean, it's a very classic British restaurant. And one of the classic things is you can only cook really good British food if you've first been to France a lot.
Yes.
So it's that kind of British restaurant, and they do steak and kidney puddings really well, and they do lots of game. They have their own game reserve where they kill things. But anyway, so my mother, my late mother, was a journalist, an agony aunt. She was really famous. You two are too young to remember her.
I do remember.
You remember Claire?
Yeah.
All right. So she had this thing that once a year, there were three siblings, me, my brother and sister, she would take us out on her rounds of national newspaper offices, magazines, whatever, which she always did on a Tuesday, and we'd have this day out with Mum, which would stop with a perfect journalist lunch in Rules. And so I would have been 10. I usually do the old Rita Rudner joke. Mine was a standard middle class upbringing. Jewish upbringing. We were exceptionally wealthy. And I just had this memory of this first time when I was about 10, and the waiter comes and says, "Will you be starting with oysters?" And my mother says, looks at me, and I, and it's clear that I'm meant to be starting with oysters. And then all the accessories that come with oysters. Mm. And the spindle frame is delivered. And then there's a plate with a muslin-wrapped lemon. And then there's Tabasco and there's some shallot vinegar. And then the oysters. Any food stuff that has this many accessories is worth the effort. I mean, frankly, you can just watch the show and not even eat them. But it's sort of I came to associate oysters with being a grown-up because I was quite keen on. I didn't mind being a child. I wasn't very good at it.
I was very similar. We've discussed this briefly before. I think from a very early age, I always rejected the kids' menu out of hand immediately.
You sophisticate.
I'm not going near it. So I would have. I would have definitely had an oyster.
You'd have had an oyster.
Yeah, for sure.
I couldn't climb trees. I couldn't skim stones. And I was just, you know, never picked for football and all that sort of stuff. But if you put me at the table, I would leapfrog my peers.
Yeah.
So where the other 10-year-olds were going, mummy! Yeah. I was going, gimme the oysters. And they became so.
Not me. Ice cream oysters, yes.
Ice cream oyster.
From ice cream,
The ones in the
ones in the
shell.
The shells.
Oh, I love them. So,
have you got this onto ice cream already?
Yeah. Don't worry, we're just going to let him take it on a diversion. Now I'm going to bring it straight
back. Wafer shell. It's a wafer shell.
Yeah.
And the base of it is dipped in chocolate with some coconut on it. Yeah. And then you have some marshmallow in the base of the shell, and then it's filled with the Mr. Whippy ice cream. And then you get
It's a fabulous, fabulous thing.
That was my oysters when I was 10.
That was my oysters.
And you have to buy it out of a van that's actually pumping carbon monoxide up your nose while you're purchasing it.
Absolutely. But hey, it came pre-shucked. It was great.
Great. Have you ever done a non-ice cream oyster?
Yes, James? And I love them now.
Oh, you do?
Yeah. I think I got into them in my 20s, though, so I was like a decade after you guys.
What about you?
I love an oyster.
All right, good.
Absolutely, yeah. But the ritual is part of it.
Yeah, the ritual is absolutely part of it. And also that flavour. I once wrote a piece for The Observer in which I said it was advice to women, never take a lover who does not like oysters because, the sex isn't going to be up to it.
Right.
And I got a lot of correspondence agreeing with me, particularly from lesbians. Particularly from gay women who said, you're absolutely right. It was great. I just felt that we were having a proper conversation.
It's a proper chat. What's your theory behind that, though? What's the argument behind...
What's the argument behind the argument that women shouldn't take a lover who doesn't like oysters?
Sure.
Because they taste brilliantly of female parts.
Oh, okay. Sorry. That was maybe very naive.
There is a very simple, straightforward... It's not just looks, it's a simple...
Sorry, I've never been more naive in my life, Jay.
Where do you think this was going?
It was basically a reference to cunnilingus, James.
Because we were talking about how sophisticated... we all were. If we eat oysters, I was like, "Yeah," because proper grown-ups eat oysters, and you want to sleep with.
And I just went straight into.
And then I was my little naive little mind.
Yeah. Have you never seen Jay eat an oyster? He licks it for 25 minutes before he swallows it.
I'm nothing if not polite.
You've made the great Benito blush.
The great Benito, of course, is a vegetarian. So, that's why he's gutted about this.
Yeah,
bad luck, mate.
You say gutted.
Where do you stand on cooked oysters?
They have their place. Mm-hmm. I don't mind a baked oyster with. I just reviewed a restaurant prior to recording this in Guernsey where they did a lovely sort of champagne sabayon with spinach and a bit of. Mature cheddar, it was a fantastic thing. And oyster beignet, or tempura oysters, when you deep fry them, they could be fantastic. Mm. But
the raw is where it's at.
I'll tell you what sort of beignets I like.
Oh, here we go.
Do they include ice cream?
Had some nice ones in New Orleans once, the nice beignets with sugar. Powdered sugar on top of it. I had it with a hot chocolate.
Yeah. I mean, actually, an oyster beignet is a deep fried oyster. The beignet you're describing is just... a posh word for a donut.
Yep.
Nothing wrong with that.
Nothing wrong
with that. If something's taken a trip through the deep fat fryer.
Yeah. Good on it.
Good.
That's a very strong. Are your oysters from Rules? Is that what you would like as part of your dream meal? Part of your dream meal now.
Funny enough, no. In the Last Supper, I actually had to go all the way to Northern Ireland to find the right ones.
Wow.
I got them imported. My oysters came flying in from Castleford Loch, I think it was.
And is that something you'd been before?
I specifically went hunting them. At heart, I'm a reporter, I'm a researcher. So when I set out on this, it was like, where am I going to find killer oysters?
Yeah.
Well, not killer oysters, which sounds like a really bad James Herbert book.
Free Willy sequel. Oyster,
yeah. But fine oysters of a particular quality, not natives, rocks. People going about natives, I'm not convinced. I got the oysters. I found this variety, this firm down in just the south of Northern Ireland, which makes amazing, grows amazing rock oysters.
What's their names?
Rooney Fish.
Rooney Fish.
Rooney Fish.
So we come to your main course now.
Spare ribs. Just spare ribs.
And we have not had this on the podcast yet.
Nobody said spare ribs.
No one said spare ribs.
God. Who are these people you keep talking to?
I think spare...
They're not Jay Rayner.
Spare ribs are yet to go through that. You know that how the whole burger thing kicked off again a few years ago? Yeah. I don't think spare ribs have gone through their sort of fashionable phase again.
They have
yet.
Sort of, because you've had the big US barbecue thing, and they are a function of US barbecue. Mm-hmm. But I'm quite a slut when it comes to spare ribs. I'm promiscuous.
Yeah.
So it's not just they must be low and slow American barbecue like this. I think Bodine, some people are down on Bodines, but I think they do a really solid job, and I quite like those. The Big Easy, again, there's one on Maiden Lane. They're great. But also, those, do you remember those Cantonese spare ribs, which would always be sort of day glow orange?
Yes.
And they'd kind of be giving off their, like they only had their own stage lighting. Yeah. I found some of those in a restaurant in Blackpool. It was amazing. just done a show in Blackpool, and we went to this place called the Walk In on the front, and it was really good. But the thing that was amazing was these spares, which were, for many of us in the panel who are a throwback, you know, in our 50s, it was a throwback to the 70s. Actually, fantastic. And then there's other ways with spare ribs, like you can get the ones with salt and pepper.
I love salt and pepper.
Salt and pepper ribs.
They're really thing, good. They're really good. So it's just the spare rib itself that you're into.
I think eating with your hands is a thing.
Okay.
I think it's a really important thing. When you eat with cutlery, you're using sight, smell, taste. When you're using your hands, touch is involved. Uh-huh. And it just becomes a really tactile thing.
Yeah.
And
an extra layer.
Do you remember in 2015 on the campaign trail, David Cameron? Remember him?
Yes.
Yeah.
He was trying to get elected.
Yeah.
And he was photographed eating a hot dog with a knife and fork.
Yeah.
And while there are myriad reasons to look at a picture of David Cameron and go, you wanker, that one, that was the one that finally nailed it for me. You are eating a hot dog with a knife and fork. Why? Why would you do this? The reason is because he thinks he needs to be sort of effete because he wants to get elected, and who wants a man with greasy fingers with their finger on the nuclear button?
Right, sure.
So he's...
That's the direct reason, you think, that people are worried his button's he's going to slip off the button.
Well, it's all, what do they call it? The optics. How it looks, how it plays.
Yes.
How it plays to Middle England. And he didn't reckon... I mean, mind you, it has to be said, there was also during that election that... For political balance...
Yes.
Yeah.
That picture of Ed Miliband with his bedroom face on eating a bacon sandwich. Yeah. And he was using his hands.
Yeah.
Or maybe he just really likes a bacon sandwich. But so...
It was more the face was the issue there.
Yeah,
it wasn't
so.
The bacon sandwich.
Yeah, no. It's more...
Which had that kind of, that slight whimper. It had the edge of a whimper on it.
Said Miliband's face.
Yeah.
So there's no, are there a specific plate of spare ribs that you would like to select?
Well, if I really could, I would go back again to being a child. There was a chippy, I think it was called Louis, somewhere in North Holt or South Harrow. Near where I grew up in Harrow in Northwest London, and it was a basic chippy, but they did these racks of ribs, and I would love to know what was on them, because some of it's probably, you know, if you put a Geiger counter in it, and they'd be cooked in the most subtle way, which is they'd be deep fried, and then they'd come out, but they were fantastic, bright orange, sort of rust coloured. And slightly sweaty. You know when you get the, you start unwrapping the paper like it's past the parcel, and the grease stains are really starting to... Anyway, so I think those. I've not seen them. I did go through a period of those really, really what's the word for them? Some deep red ones that you get out. Well, I think KFC used to do them.
Yeah.
Those ones were really...
It's almost like school dinner sauce, really, isn't it? It's just like really offensive flavour.
Or just, you know, makeup that you put on your cheeks to indicate that you are now a savage.
Is know, that
in long lines.
That's what you should do before you eat them, you know, get your fingers in
there. Yeah, all over your cheeks. And then bring them on. But, you know, I've always been hands-on. I like the tactile thing, and spirits are tactile. So I'd go back, I think, to Louis, South Harrow, circa 1978. God, there's a theme. It's all from when I'm about 10, 12.
Have you seen Ratatouille?
I have seen Ratatouille. Fabulous film. In fact, it's the only film that if you talk to chefs about the representation of restaurants on film, they might, if they're trying to be posh, talk about Tampopo or Big Night, which is a great film as well, Stanley Tucci's film.
Yeah.
But the one that they all go, oh, yeah, is Ratatouille.
Right.
It's an animated film, but it's the one that gets restaurant kitchens better than any other.
And why do you think that is?
Because actually they did their research.
Right.
They had some very serious people involved. Thomas, a big American chef called Thomas Keller, was a consultant on it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Guy Savoy was involved in some way. And they got these other... When they translate it into other languages, they had other big-name chefs doing the voicing of one particular part. So they'd done their research.
And how do you think... So they nailed the kitchens. But how do you think they nailed the critics?
Because Anton Ego.
What I'm thinking, the reason why I'm reminded of it, is because both of your dishes so far have been childhood memories.
And that moment when Anton Ego eats the ratatouille and he is just simply transported back to being a 10-year-old child or a little child. And it's brilliant.
Yes.
And I quoted... So I do a live show about my worst restaurant experiences called My Dining Hell.
Mm.
And in the intro, it's based on a book, which is a collection of my most negative reviews. Still available. in the introduction to that, where I'm talking about the culture of the negative review and why we like them, I quote that Anton Ego statement at the front, you know, taken in the main, what we do does not amount to a whole hill of beans compared to the creativity of chefs.
Yes.
It's a brilliant speech, utterly brilliant speech.
So do you feel like that as well, that you're looking for... Do you look to get transported back to being a little boy?
Not on a regular basis. not on a constant basis. But, you know, having spent, 18 months writing about My Last Supper and all the memoir elements that are in there, then that has become an inevitable thing. Because part of it is, you know, I'm in my 50s, so there's less time to go than there has been, and therefore mortality hangs around. Both my parents are dead, so I've shifted up... the bench in the waiting room, as someone once said.
Yeah.
And so you tend to look back and try and cling to those particular things, and that's how food works. Food is brilliant at that. It really is, as being a time machine.
That was a really good question, James. I thought you were about to say you like ice cream ribs. That's where I thought you were going with it.
Well, actually, it was either that or I was going to say, have you seen the ribs in the Flintstones that they put on the car? they look really great.
Yeah, but the thing is, I'd watch that and think, when I was a kid, thinking... Wouldn't mind.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I'll give it a crack.
It does look pretty delicious. They topple his car over.
Yeah.
They're so big.
They're so big and the car goes
Bontosaurus
over one
ribs.
Side.
Yeah, I think we'd all like to have some Bontosaurus.
How should a rib be cooked? Because I think with meat you get told if it's like low and slow and it falls off the bone, it's good. But then, me and James are both a big fan of Barbecue Pitmasters, which is a competition barbecue cooking show. And they say that the best way to cook a rib is it should... be on the bone and you should have to bite and pull it off.
Yes, yeah. I mean, for the American stuff,
American
barbecue, yes, it should still have some bite to it.
Mm.
And so, but it's still kind of a low and slow thing.
Yeah.
It's just how long is it going to be and how much direct heat are you going to give it? The quickest ones are lamb ribs and they have to be eaten the moment they come out. And you can do those in about an hour. Just roast those very quickly in a hot oven.
Yeah.
And they're a real kind of...
I think I prefer lamb ribs. I think, yeah.
Chinese way is generally to braise first in a braising liquor of soy and star anise and a bit of sugar, and so they're simmered in that for an hour or two.
Yeah,
and then they're quick. Either they're quick fried, or they're quick roasted.
I really want some ribs now.
You really want ribs?
Yeah, I want ribs.
Go for ribs
after. Also, you've kind of convinced me because a lot of the time there's a bit of an ongoing argument with me and Ed about like I don't like chicken wings and stuff like that, because I have to eat them with my hands, right? So I don't like...
James doesn't like eating with his hands, right? And he doesn't like taking things off the bone.
Does he not?
So I don't like all of that.
Well, this is but probably the only time we're ever going to meet.
This is the first time when I felt like I've been kind of like... hearing what you said about it has to be tactile and all your senses involved makes me feel like I actually want to get into that.
Does it? Does it really?
Yeah. I feel like I want
to. You've been turned. Have you been turned?
I feel like I've been
turned.
I feel like I have been turned.
Have you?
But like, were you?
I don't believe you.
I feel like
I'm slightly concerned now. I hear that you've got all these issues, the touchy thing. That do you move with a pack of wet wipes?
No, I don't. I don't. But
do you like? Do you like to keep an eye out for a shop where you might be able to purchase a wet wipe? Should the eventuality arise?
No, but I think if I was having ribs or chicken wings and stuff, I would want too many wet wipes on hand so that I felt completely like this is okay. After I've done eaten this, I can clean up completely.
You want an exclusion zone around you as well, so you're not splattering other people.
Yeah. Well, no, that's fine. Other people's fine.
Just but you,
I feel
you
like
care about,
I feel
right?
like afterwards, I never feel like I've completely got it off my hands. I just feel completely
unclean.
I feel unclean.
I want to be straight into
I live to
a
be unclean, James.
Shower. Like I want to be straight into a shower that is like the biggest pressure shower
after
ever.
You eat chicken wings, you feel like Macbeth, essentially, right?
You know, like when people go out in prison and they get and they all have to go in the shower
and they have to be hosed down,
That's
by a 1970s prison guard.
Yeah,
scum.
I want them to chuck that horrible powder over me that burns, and then spray me with the hose, and then throw me in prison if they like. If that's what it takes after I've had those ribs,
maybe just avoid ribs.
Maybe, but like I have had.
Have you thought of committing crimes just to get through that experience?
I'd have to commit a crime, and then because it's just because I want the rib stuff off me, so I'd have to either commit a crime and then victory eat some ribs while the cops are coming, or you eat the ribs
and then call the cops, quickly commit the crime, smearing your victims, in barbecue sauce,
or it's literally it is your last supper if you do it. Like you're on death row.
That's fair enough.
Order your last supper, ribs, and then it doesn't matter if you're dirty because you'd be dead.
Yep, sure. It doesn't. It's okay being dirty if you're dead.
Yeah, that's our catchphrase.
Little catchphrase on the show.
It's okay being dirty if you're dead.
We try and work it into every show.
That's good.
It's okay being dirty if you're dead. So, come to your side dish now.
So my side dish emerged out of, there's a whole chapter in the book about bread and butter, because there has to be, and butter's a big thing, and I go looking for butter. And I came up with a vehicle for butter involving cabbage. And what's brilliant about this is I do eat salad, I want people to know, and I do go to the gym, but I buttered cabbage.
Yeah.
And it's a way of doing buttered cabbage which makes cabbage really filthy.
Nice.
In a good way. Actually, I don't like those words about dirty and clean. Not dirt, food's not dirty and clean, but it makes it delicious.
Yes.
I mean, cabbage can be delicious, but this is that white cabbage, and you fry it off very slowly in a bit of olive oil and then some butter, quite a lump of butter. And then you add a glug of 150ml of chicken stock, and then you let it cook down until almost all of it has gone, and then you add some more chicken stock and some more butter, and you let it cook down again, and what you end up with is caramelized cabbage, which is deeply savory and deeply buttered.
Wow.
You can do it with vegetable stock as well if you want to keep it, you know, non-animal, but with the chicken stock.
Is this your own?
I believe it is my own, my own recipe. It's my own method.
Cabbage.
Jay's dirty. Well, Jay's buttery dirty. Cabbage. I'm withdrawing the dirt.
That's fine. Consider it.
No one has to die here.
Nobody
it's
has to die here. Spare him. I mean, you know, we're talking about a meal at the end of the world, aren't we?
Yes.
We're talking about there's no tomorrow and there are no consequences. So if anybody's listening, going, listen to him, that unhealthy, dirty. Oh, I've seen him on MasterChef with those dark rings under his eyes. It's a Jewish Ashkenazi trait, okay? he must have liver issues because of eating all that butter.
Yeah.
No, I haven't.
Did I say that? Do you get a lot of that?
Oh, I've had nutritionists. I'm doing inverted commas.
Yes.
In front of the microphone. Claiming that they could diagnose everything that was wrong with me. I think.
Wow.
Where would you stop, is what I wanted to say.
But they're sitting in a food shop.
Yeah, people are staggeringly rude. But you guys know that. They must.
Yeah.
How often do you get told you're not funny?
Oh, yeah, all the time.
Yeah, which is slightly, you know, given what you do for a living.
I've never experienced it.
You've never experienced it. You've always been funny.
Yet to happen.
Which is, I think being told you're not funny is probably more offensive than no one's telling you you're missing your mouth. No. Like they are, you're doing your job, I suppose. But
they're not saying you don't know about food. I guess they're just saying they're just trying to find flaws and go, you should stop eating all that food, or you're going to die.
Well, eventually, sometime, but I look after myself. Yeah. Anyway, so this butter cabbage is a very luscious thing.
It sounds phenomenal.
And it is pretty damn good.
That sounds like a good addition to Christmas dinner to make vegetables more exciting.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, the nutritional value might have fallen slightly
in
the process, but it has other things going for it.
And do you cook a lot?
Yeah, I do, because I can't eat out in restaurants all the time, and I'm greedy. Plus, I like the process. I like the Zen process of if you're feeling like you're not in control of the world, you can go into the kitchen, bend ingredients to your will, make a mess, tidy the mess up, feed people. Something has happened. You've taken back control through food.
Yeah.
And did you... when you started cooking, was it because you were a big fan of like going out and you were thinking from an early age you were thinking about food more than
I just thought it was a necessary skill for a grown-up.
That's a good point.
I just think it's something that if you can't, you're missing part of the arsenal of grown-upness. Plus, if you want to eat the good stuff and you can't eat out, then you're gonna have to do it for yourself.
And
I found I liked the process.
Yeah,
I didn't really get into it until university.
Okay.
I cooked some terrible things when I was a kid for my parents, like poor people.
Can you remember some
examples? Oh, I did a really terrible thing involving mints and green peppers. Just the thought of it. And then I made banana bread once, and I it was very nice, the banana bread. And I suspect my parents thought that there was a life of baked goods in front of them, except all I ever did was fucking banana bread. and they're very nice, darling, very nice. Oh, Jesus, he's baking again. We can't stop him. He's still cooking.
Smells of banana.
The bananas are out.
And so banana bread is not going to be your dessert.
No. No.
No, but we've got the drink first.
But
it would be great if banana bread wasn't. Oh, did your cabbage dish have a name?
Did my cabbage dish have a name? Buttered cabbage.
Buttered cabbage.
Buttered cabbage.
Do you not want to put your name into it? Because it's your...
Rainer's buttered cabbage.
Jay's buttered cabbage.
Jay's buttered cabbage. So, that sounds more appealing straight away, actually. We can be snobbish about it, but that sounds nice. Jay's buttered cabbage.
Well, you can try and be snobbish about it, but I'll just roll my eyes at it. You're such enthusiasm. You'll actually hear my eyeballs roll.
Your beverage.
My beverage. Vodka and lime. Vodka and lime cordial.
That surprised me. I thought you were going to go with a specific wine or something.
No.
Or, no?
No, I mean, there are various things I could have gone for to try and sound grand. There are some things I like, but one of the things that happened in the 90s was the rise of the alcopop.
Yes.
And what the alcopop did was make it too easy to drink. Yes. So back when I was a kid, in the 70s, late 70s, early 80s, alcohol was something you had to push on through. You tasted beer for the first time, it was horrible.
Yeah.
Really horrible, but everybody was doing it, so I've got to kind of try and master
that.
I'll get there. You try whiskey, you think, wow, it's horrible, I'll keep trying. But one of my ways through this was to discover vodka and lime, which is basically my own alcopop. Yeah.
Yes.
And then when I became a journalist, I managed to get myself to New York, sent to New York for the first time, and I was in a bar in the Algonquin Hotel. It was the only... It's a weird story. I started very quickly. I got sent to New York by The Observer when I was like 22. And I booked into the Algonquin because it was the only hotel I'd ever heard of. It's the great literary hotel that Dorothy Parker had the New Yorker round table at, and James Thurber. And so I thought it was very grand. And there was a bar there. It was a very literary bar. Even, it was rumoured that even the barman, head barman, had published two novels. And... I sat down at this bar, very jet-lagged and a long way from home and very alone and a bit scared because I had to file a national newspaper column at the end of the week from a standing start, didn't know anyone in town. And he said, what would you have to drink? And I said, vodka and lime. And he said, do you mean a vodka gimlet? I said, so what? Sorry? And he said, vodka gimlet, vodka, lime cordial. I said, are you telling me that this thing that I've been drinking... has a name? Because if it has a name, it's sophisticated. It's no longer
Jay's vodka and lime.
It's no longer Jay's vodka and lime. It's a thing, a vodka gimlet. You can have a gin gimlet, apparently. And he went, it's a vodka gimlet. Hey, great choice. And then he said, what's your favourite vodka? I said, no. I was like, And I just pointed at one, and I pointed at Stolly, without Stolyinka, without really knowing what it was. And apparently that was a really good, tasteful choice.
Right.
So I had gone from a childhood vodka, lime, Alcopop creation to a man with his own taste in vodka who was having a gimlet. And even though there are other things, actually, I'm quite keen on a daiquiri, which is rum and a lot of sours and a whiskey sour and a vodka sour. Mm. They're all the same thing.
Yeah.
It's basically big hit of white alcohol, not the whiskey sour, obviously. Big hit of alcohol and big hit of citrus.
Yeah.
And I just, it's a great drink.
So it's vodka and lime cordial.
Yeah.
And that's it.
What do you want, mate? I mean, what else do you want in there?
And is it always that brand of, do you always still go for the same vodka? That
no,
you
no, 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 no. My view is that once you're pouring lime cordial into it, it doesn't really make you laugh. I mean, I'd probably lay off the full impact of the lime cordial, but I think, as you asked me, you know, for this very significant meal, what I would drink, it would have to be that because it would just take me back to that transference from childhood to adulthood.
Yes.
Becoming a sophisticated man and realizing that childish things could have real names.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so it's still very significant.
There's something about New York specifically that makes people feel like that, I think. I think the first time I went and I was by myself after working there for a bit and sitting at a bar of a restaurant and drinking a cocktail and thinking, I'm pretty cool right now.
Yeah.
Everyone's looking at me because I'm pretty cool right now.
I'm in Mad Men.
Yeah, exactly.
So we arrive at the dessert. Obviously,
James's favourite.
My favourite.
Your favourite? It's a chocolate eclair. To be a chocolate eclair. Why? Look, first of all, you know, we get consistency here.
Yes.
If you ever see somebody eating a chocolate eclair with a knife and fork,
sure.
Fuck off.
Yes, yeah.
If David Cameron comes round and you serve him a chocolate eclair and he gets out the knife and fork, you say, David, no.
No, David.
No.
I mean, I'm going to let you explain the chocolate eclair and you can talk about the chocolate eclair, but just know that I disagree with your choice wholly and we can have that argument in a few minutes.
Okay. There is a childhood element.
Yes, okay.
Okay, so desserts and sweet things were not a big thing in our house because my mother was fully aware that we all had our size issues, but they would be outbreaks of indulgence. Mm-hmm. So rather than there being... So I had this thin friend... And their family had a chocolate drawer in the kitchen. And there was a drawer just full of chocolate.
Yeah.
And I would see him, he would go in and he would open it and take one piece out and he'd eat it and then close the drawer. And I didn't understand how that worked. because if that drawer had been in my house, it would just be emptied on a daily basis.
I had a thin friend who had that drawer as well. If that drawer had been in my house, there would have been a padlock on it.
Exactly. So every now and then...
What thin people playing
in? I know.
Guess what, guys? I've got a chocolate drawer now.
Have you?
Yeah.
Have you really?
Yeah, but you don't restrain yourself. You just don't put on weight.
That's true. I'm a freak.
Is that true? Can you eat literally anything?
At the moment. I mean, we'll see how long that lasts.
Yeah, I'm coming back in 10 years to laugh.
James and his dad are absolute sweet freaks.
Are they?
Yeah. It's very funny that it's my dad as well.
Yeah.
So sometimes my father would appear with a box of pastries. He'd gone to some place in Hampstead, and there would be a box of pastries. And we were always told that we couldn't have the chocolate eclair because it was his.
Ah.
And however often we said, get two? Yeah. Two chocolate eclair, maybe three? It wouldn't happen because his need for an assortment.
Yeah.
He needed an assorted box. So I could never have the chocolate eclair. But I bloody love a chocolate eclair. Choux pastry is a brilliant thing. Mm-hmm. You know, profiteroles are made from choux pastry. It's a cooked out pastry, which is then baked. It's very hard to make. And then it's filled with cream. And then it's got thick layers of chocolate on top. And it's tactile, isn't it? And so, you know, it's basically, it's me dealing with my father issues. it is a finely calibrated piece of dessert work, pastry work. Got pastry, you got cream, you got chocolate on top. What I can see in Ed's eyes is he's trying to muster his arguments to rebut me, but he's feeling on slightly fragile ground.
Well, I am now because you've obviously described it so well. That's your trade, and you're convincing
me. Ed, it's no shame in being turned by Rainer.
He's been turned onto the ribs.
Happened to me earlier.
I know. Yeah,
I've got a present now.
I think when I want a dessert, I want something dense and luxurious and unctuous. And I feel like
but enough about your personal
I've ever,
life.
I've ever had
yeah.
is I've bitten into it and it's gone like this. It's too much air in it.
Too much air.
Too much air in it.
So you don't like chocolate eclairs because you've only had shit ones.
Cream's boring.
Cream's boring.
Cream's boring. Airy cream. Too much bubbles.
Your podcast, mate.
I'm the same with profiteroles. I think choux pastry is like weird and tasty.
What about a croque-en-bouche?
No, that's just a sculpture.
A sculpture dribbled in caramel.
Yeah, but
with cream inside it.
It's that hard cracking. Caramel.
Listen, any dessert.
I knew was ripened open. You. I knew it was letting you talk for a while. And that was getting you.
Any dessert that needs to be made in a traffic cone is clearly a fine thing.
No, it's showing off a croque-en-bouche. It's showing off.
There's a stand-up comedian.
Yeah, but I'm not a croc-en-bouche.
Standing on a stage in front of 1,000 people.
I'm a croc-en-bouche.
It's showing off. There's various kinds of showing off.
I just, I mean, I'm willing to be, if you've got a tip on where I can get an amazing eclair, I will go and eat one.
Also, tell him why cream's good.
My cream's good.
Yeah. You're the
sweet
worst
cream.
Type of bully.
Huh?
You're the worst type of bully.
Because you won't do it himself.
Standing behind the main bully going like, hit him again.
Yeah.
there is a place.
That's going to be like in prison.
There's a place on Old Compton Street, at the corner on Old Compton Street, called Maison Choux.
Okay.
And they do only chocolate, well, eclairs of many flavours.
Right.
Ed, I mean, it is your prerogative to choose a different flavour of...
What sort of flavours?
Well, they've got salted caramel, they've got raspberry, and they've got...
They have a peanut butter.
They almost certainly have a peanut butter.
I'll get that one.
Should we go after this?
Yeah.
Are we going to basically do an oyster spare rib and eclair crawl?
We're going to go and have your full meal.
Are we?
And you're going for a classic...
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You're not having all the flavours you listed.
Well, I kind of like... I do like what they do at Maison Choux.
Yeah.
And, you know, I can walk into there and go, fuck you, Dad, I'm having whatever I like. I loved him very dearly. But the whole chocolate eclair thing was slightly disturbing. But
it's funny that's now your idea of the dream thing because it was held back from you for so long.
Oh, I'm just one big bundle of things I've been reaching for my entire life.
Yeah,
yeah. Well, I think that's why I'm a comedian because my dad never laughed at me.
Is that what it was?
Yeah.
He did. He just didn't do it in your hearing.
Yeah.
It was worse. Yeah.
He used to bring back a box of laughs, didn't he? But you weren't allowed.
You weren't allowed any of the laughs.
No.
These are my laughs.
These are my laughs. None of them are for you. Right, Jay, I'm going to read your menu back to you now, see if you're happy with it. You would like sparkling water?
I would.
To start. Well, not to start, but yeah. You'd like some poppadoms. Then you would like some oysters from Castleford Lock.
Can I point something out? I mean, you did ask me the question of a choice between poppadoms and bread.
Yes.
And I politely answered you. Mm-hmm. But poppadoms have no place in this meal. Well, you threw it in, James. I mean,
yeah.
Oh. I mean, it's like you're the maitre d' of this restaurant who's forcing your will upon his guests.
Yeah, best kind of maitre d'.
Yeah. Okay. it's just that when you go from, sparkling water through oysters, poppadoms, no, don't be ridiculous.
Yeah.
Your still, podcast, off you go.
10 years at maitre d' school. I know what I'm doing.
James is 90, by the way.
Yeah. By the way.
He looks good, isn't it?
I'm 9 years old. Oysters, Castleford Lock.
Yeah.
Spare ribs.
Yes.
You didn't specify where you wanted them from.
Oh, we did. Was it?
Well, no, I did. I went to Louis, the fish and chip place in South Harrow, circa 78.
Absolutely. Side, Jay's buttered cabbage.
Yeah, can come straight out of my own kitchen.
Absolutely. Do you want to be the one making them, or do you want me to just conjure them up with genie powers so they're exactly as you would make them?
No, your genie will be shit. I'll make them.
Vodka and lime, brackets vodka gimlet, but we call it vodka and lime today.
I think we call it vodka and lime.
And your dessert is a chocolate eclair.
That'll do me.
That is a very nice meal, Jay nice Rayner. Thank you so much. What do we normally say at the end?
What we say at the end.
We just say thank you very much.
We say thank you very much.
Make sure you buy My Last Supper by Jay Rayner.
Yes, do. Thank you very much, Jay.
It's been a pleasure.
Jay.
There it is, the off menu of Jay Rayner. Great episode, right?
Yeah, great episode, great choices. I mean, you got your backup a little bit at one point.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the whole eclair situation, I don't know whether I'm going to be convinced around to eclairs. I told Jay as he left I'd go and try one of the eclairs, but even the idea of it makes me feel ill.
But I know you will try it because you're a man of your word.
I'm a man of my word. I will go and try one of those eclairs if that's what has to be done.
Yes, and, you, and I think you should take a photo of yourself with it, and you should tweet that photo, and you should let the listeners know how you enjoyed the eclair.
Should I tweet it to Jay Rayner?
Yep, also tag in Jay Rayner.
Okay, but what if he doesn't answer me?
Well, that's what you get for being an eclair snob.
Right, I'm not being a snob, I just don't like it.
I didn't say you were a snob.
Right. Well, what Jay didn't say, even if he did pick eclairs for his dessert, is he didn't say hairy crackling, which was
congratulations, Jay. He was close, but he was saying the ribs, and I was like, oh, well, we're in the territory of meat here. Maybe he's going to put some crackling on these ribs. But he didn't.
That's quite a good idea, actually.
Yeah.
Imagine some spare ribs with ground up crackling on the top.
Oh, I'd actually quite like that.
Yeah, minus hair. But look, great episode. Lovely to have someone on who is so well versed in the world of food.
Yes, he knows his stuff, and I liked the fact that he was a bit like Anton Ego, and he does think about his past, his childhood when he's eating food.
I know I said it at the time, James, but that was a really great question.
Thank you, Ed. I was really happy with that question.
It was a really good question, and he clearly loves Ratatouille so much. Yes, and new bits of the script.
I'll tell you how I came up with that question.
Yeah,
is after we interviewed Grace Dent, I thought of it on the way home.
Oh, he really slammed Grace Dent in that episode, didn't he?
Oh, shots fired.
Shots fired. I think we should get some more food critics on, and then we can properly get some beef going.
Get the critics critiquing the critics.
And the beef should be medium rare.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, baby.
That'd be good, Ed.
If you buy Jay's book,
yes.
I mean, it comes out this week. It's called My Last Supper. It's as he discussed. It's about his dream meal. Really, it's you know, we are suing.
If you're a fan of the podcast, you're gonna love this book.
Yeah,
I reckon.
Love this book. So get that book. He's also doing a live tour of it, which you can find out more about on jrayner.co.uk.
Yes.
He's also got a podcast.
He has.
Big business podcast these days.
Yes.
It's called Out to Lunch. You can get that from all of your normal podcast places. James, what are you up to?
Not much.
Cool, me neither. So thanks very much for listening to another episode of Off Menu. We will be back soon with another one. Subscribe, like it, give it a 5-star review, tell your friends about it, all that jazz. Let's bump it up the charts.
Bump up the charts?
Bump it up the charts.
I'm pushing down the farts.
Bump it up the charts. Pushing down the farts, if no, but no coconut. Thank you very much for listening. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Lucy Beaumont.
And guess what? I'm Sam Campbell. If you enjoy, there's another podcast just coming out. Oh, no, the podcast is out now.
Yeah. If people have enjoyed Off Menu, will they enjoy Lucy and Sam's Perfect Brains? I don't know.
There's a bit of crossover. We talk about maybe, you know, a couple of food issues. We talk about cutlery, and that's near food. We reckon it's out now. Not soon, it's now.
Is it on all the platforms?
Oh, it absolutely is. If you like James and if you love Ed, you might get a kick out of this. But yeah, again, no pressure. But yeah, this one is coming. This one's out now. Lucy and Sam's Perfect Brands.